I found a lot of identity in the things I was able to do and perform and show other people and the way it looked, whether it was counted in a scoreboard or how I looked. And I struggled most internally because that was something that I could cover up. But I couldn't dress up my soul. I couldn't quantify my soul and my internal struggles. All I could see was just, I'm not enough.
Welcome back. Mind Bully Podcast, a podcast focused on beating the hell out of your negative voice. Norton Tode Asse is this here. Fine host, Dallas, Texas, native. Well, Fort Worth native, by way of Nigeria, because I'm Nigerian. But that's not the point of this very episode. This very episode, if you haven't listened to this, it's about overcoming the negative voice. And the joy that I have today is that I'm joined with someone who also does the same in a different way on their podcast. The host and the guest that I have here today is Miss Brianna Fisher, the Made in His Image podcast host. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Super excited to be here. Thank you for that wonderful introduction as well.
I mean it. I think that what you're doing with Made in His Image podcast is beautiful because there's a lot of people, me even, that need those palatable, teachable moments that we can apply with our lives and hear the story and how you break it down. And everything that you're doing there, it's in our tone. It's not like old and boring to where I'm just skipping it. I'm like, damn, like she just talked to me. Damn, like, and it's very much needed. And I always, for me, I'm very critical of right or wrong. I'm critical in who I listen to for, especially to feed off my faith. But just your podcast, when I found it, I said, dang, like, let me hit her up quickly. Like, I randomly DM'd you. I'm like, dang, I love this. I love this pod. I want you on the podcast. So again, thank you for joining. To understand, though, you more, to understand why even you come up with a podcast, I would ask you a three-letter word. Why? Why Made in His Image? Why say that, okay, this idea that I have to insert myself into the story. There's a bunch of podcasts out there. Why did you think that was needed for you to raise your voice?
It was God and God alone. Because me personally, when God told me that I was going to be podcasting, I said no several times. Several times, as a matter of fact. And I said, get somebody else to do it. And the funny thing about it was because my own mind bully was beating me up with excuses of why I should not do it, of nobody would listen. Your voice is not that important. Nobody really cares. Not to mention the platform is already saturated. So there's not really space for you in that particular area. But I said, the reason I started was simply because I told God yes. I said, back in 2021, when he first told me the name, because I didn't even know what the name was for. I just know I heard Made in His Image. It was because of an Erykah Badu song when I was driving in the car. And that was literally why. She says, if we were made in His image, then call us by our name. And those four words stuck. And so from that point forward, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do with that, but that's something special. And so when I said yes to God, God was pretty much telling me, like, if you believed in if you're in yourself the way that you believed in everybody else, you would get to see me in a new light and yourself in a new way. And so it was this identity journey that began that I'm still learning to this day of what all it entails, but it simply just started with the yes, because if it were up to me, I wouldn't have started. I would not have started. And I would probably still be sitting wondering, what if had I not?
What was that wondering like? Because if he told you in 2021 and you said no, take me through those times of the indecision and the wrestling within yourself. Okay, God, I get you, but I'm not doing that. Like, what were those next days like that finally led you to the moment that said, all right, bro, I listen, I give up. You got it. I'm going to start a podcast. Walk me through those days.
Those days. So, all right, I'll go in chronological order. When he first told me, I had said no, because there were other things I wanted to do, but I was like, I don't feel like I have the voice for
those
it.
Things?
And then
those other things that you wanted to do?
I originally was a YouTube channel. That's what I thought it was supposed to be. But I talked myself out of that. And then after I talked myself out of that, I just kind of gave up and was like, well, you know, I'm better at helping other people's visions come to life. And God kind of sat me down. And my very first episode that I ever recorded was a very personal episode because it was a story of Gideon and how God told Gideon that he was going to accomplish something through Gideon. And Gideon met God with like three different excuses. He's like, I'm the least of my tribe. I'm not capable of doing that. And God kept responding with Gideon to Gideon with a lot of patience. And so from that point, it was this identity journey God started taking me on, which is why I made in his image was that much more personal, because it had me take a look at what was I finding my identity in. And a lot of the time that was an excuse I met God with of why I couldn't do it, because it was a past trauma, because it was a childhood trauma. It was because of my own excuses and disbelief in myself. I couldn't believe what God was telling me in the first place. And so that was a long journey in 2022. And then in 2022 as well, I had to kind of grieve a lot of plans I set up for myself because they happened and they fell apart. All these details and plans I wrote fell apart in front of my face, and my mental health struggled severely. That was probably the worst mental year I had. And by that point, I said, all right, God, I give up on everything I have planned, every idea I had in mind, every like vision I had for myself that was not in accordance to what you had in mind for me. And I'm going to go to you about it. And now that I'm going to you about it, you'll be able to tell me who I am and what I'm supposed to do and what my plans are. And from that point forward, there was just a grace that he gave me. There was there was patience, and there was a grace that he gave me to speak past fear, to speak about things that I naturally struggle with being vulnerable. So opening up about what I was struggling with, being transparent and acknowledging whether one person hears this or nobody hears it at all, or 30 people hear it, it's simply being obedient, which is what I told God I was going to do, because I tried my way the first time and that didn't go too well. So I was like, all right, let's start from scratch. Let's start over and we'll do this your way this time. And then ever since then, I've just been exploring the dimension that he wrote out for me.
Exploring that dimension. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think whenever you're building something, the origin story is really the story that people connect with. And that's what I saw. And it really helped me with your breakdown there, because if I think about your story and I equate it to mine, it's like I went through a tough time in Germany where I was without my family, was without my friends, I had a torn hamstring, I had a concussion. I was carrying the weight of losing two family members in college. And so you go to this point where you try to prove yourself through a game. Like you use the external factors, you see the evidence of the cheers and people championing you in that way. And so you keep growing in that. And the moment where you can't play the game and you can't show, oh, I'm worthy, I'm worth it, like you're struggling with that, the moment that you can't do it, you're really forced with a test of who am I? What can I do? Why am I here? And I like that you mentioned your first episode. There's three kind of dimensions that you talked about that really helped me. It's the external, the personal, and the internal. It helped me so much because it's like, it's everything. We look to downplay who we are due to our circumstances. Like my circumstances say I can't do this. You make all these excuses, and almost to a different way, like the pod, God was like, start the pod. And you're like, okay, who am I? Who do I think I am starting this pod? And a question for you, and you know, if you listen to this podcast like you have, I jump everywhere. I'm thinking this through. In this podcast now, and it's funny because we both host a podcast. In this podcast today, which one of those dimensions do you struggle with the most?
It started, I would say internal the most. I would say internal because it's so crazy. I have an amazing support system. Amazing. I was also an athlete. I was an athlete all throughout high school and college. I played volleyball at Tuskegee. Shout out to HBCUs. And I found a lot of identity in the things I was able to do and perform and show other people and the way it looked, whether it was counted in a scoreboard or how I looked. And I struggled most internally because that was something that I could cover up, but I couldn't dress up my soul. I couldn't quantify my soul and my internal struggles. All I could see was just, I'm not enough. I don't have it. I don't have the words, or I don't have the belief or the confidence or the assurance of what I see in everybody else. And so internally, when God was telling me and speaking his words over me, I said, who? Because on paper, yes, but internally, no. Like, there was a disagreement between what he was saying about me and what I said about myself, because your external circumstances, how you talk to yourself, play a very large effect. And even voices that are not yours that you played over and over again and became the soundtrack of your mind, though, that ends up becoming this song you listen to over and over again. And so there was these voices, whether they were mine or they were from many years ago from people that said something that I held on to that hurt me or discouraged me, I held on to those very long. And so internally, it was this wrestle. I was internally wrestling with any good thing. I couldn't receive a compliment. I couldn't receive praise. I wouldn't even celebrate my own wins because I'm like, all right, next thing, all right, next thing, all right, next thing. Like, as an athlete, you got to move on to the next point to get ready. Like, I can't, like, as much as I want to, like, I played volleyball, I was a DS. So, like, I want to celebrate this dig, this fire dig I got to get right back in position. So my brain was in this place of having to set up for the next thing instead of internally resting in what God said about me, internally knowing that in him, being made in his image, that means I'm his craftsmanship. I am loved. I have purpose. I have so many gifts that I don't even know about, but I couldn't make up my mind.
There's something that you did say in all that I do want to hit at, the voices that you're hearing. Did you ever find the starting point or the point, the moment where that voice, or you started listening to those voices? Were you able to identify, okay, maybe in childhood, maybe at this moment, I did this back in the day that I still, for some reason, I listened to that? Because on your episode, you talked about wrestling with childhood trauma and doing the work. It's hard work. You mentioned that. What was your journey like in identifying those stories that you need to let go of?
It's like you have a bullet in an open wound and the wound heals around the bullet, and you got to open it up and go dig in it. It was very uncomfortable because my friends say I'm a very self-aware person, and I'd like to think that I am until I really, really started dealing with myself. And when I was going to childhood and old relationships, I started to notice how the more deeper I went, the less I wanted to talk about it, the more I wanted to hide because I didn't know all that stuff was there.
When you think about pinpointing those stories and the negative voice, the voices that you have in your head to your early days, now that you even brought up volleyball, I'm glad that you did. And I told you through all this kind of complications that we had that you're going to have some explaining to do because you do. I also saw that you played volleyball. I also saw that you went to Bowie and you were defensive player of the year, and you go to Tuskegee and you play for years. And the memory of you playing volleyball is nowhere to be found on your pages. I'm jumping
did
around.
Did your research. I'll give you that. Yeah. Did your research.
But why? Why though? Why don't we know that you played club volleyball, that volleyball was a part of who you were all of your life? Like, where do those stories kind of end, and why did they kind of get erased from your personal history and what you put out?
You did your research. I respect that. I honestly, I can't really tell you because I don't fully know why they're a race. Volleyball was a big part of my life for the longest part of my life. And I wouldn't say that like there was an identity that I had in it. I just didn't want to be the only thing people recognized about me or knew of me. I wanted to explore what else can I be. And now, mind you, I can be naturally very private unintentionally. And, you know, there's parts I just don't share for whatever reason. I don't even know why. But I will say I just didn't keep it up. And I honestly can't tell you why, but I did want to back away from being an athlete and a volleyball player to just be Brianna, because college, that's your job. That is your identity. That is your job. You represent the university everywhere you go. You're a student athlete everywhere. Like, it's just, it rides on you. It was a job. And I think I had a strange relationship with volleyball towards senior year, 'cause I was injured. I wasn't playing that much because for one, I was just trying to graduate. I had like 19 hours both semesters just so I could graduate on time. And that was a journey in and of itself. But also, I put blood, sweat, and tears into the game, and for an injury to kind of end my career the way it did. And mind you, I still played. I played my junior, because I got injured my sophomore year. I ended up playing my junior year. I didn't play maybe two games, probably my senior year, for something that I revolved my whole life around, then ended. And it was like, honestly, I was kind of happy for it to end, because it was only supposed to go so far. Your body can only go so far. Your abilities can only go so far. How you perform can only go so far. And it was finally an opportunity for me to just be a regular student, for me to just be a regular girl at a historically Black college, getting her education, doing something for herself. And I felt a little bit of liberty in that, but it was also just this goodbye I did want to say, because like I said, volleyball taught me a lot about discipline. It taught me a lot about structure. It taught me how to be on time. Because if you weren't 5 minutes early to practice, you were late. And if you weren't keeping your grades up, you weren't going to play. And if you were not being, if you're not leading by example, you're not being a leader. And so it was this toss up of, I'm happy this is over. I'm so sad that this is going goodbye. And I erased it from memory, but not intentionally. It's still on my highlights a little bit. Like, I'm a washed up athlete, as I call myself, but I think that's a long winded answer why.
And honestly, I can see that in your shoes. It's like you grow up, you're the only girl in your family, and you have about 16 relatives, whether they play pro or collegiate, they're playing athletics, they're doing sports. And so you're in this mindset of, okay, sports, 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 this is what I do. This is what I should do. This is me. Before you even know who you actually are, probably in your adolescent years, you're like, okay, I'm going to do this eventually. So let me throw myself in it. So it makes sense to where you're at this point now. But if you were to kind of unpack and go back to those times in the household before you picked up the sport, that girl in Grand Prairie, Texas, if I was to know, or if I was a fly on the wall in your room on a random day, what would I see? And who was that girl outside of the sport and outside of who you are now? Who was that girl?
That was a very special girl. And I honored that little girl all the time. Don't make me cry. Don't do that. But there was just this creative little crafty girl that liked to talk a lot. She liked to make things, create things. She loved Jesus even at a young age. She loved her family. She loved animals. She wanted to be a veterinarian originally.
What happened? What happened when you wanted to be a vet and you changed to this career for sports and now to education? What was that switch?
I did not want to be in school 8 years, plain and simple. That was it. I didn't want to be in school for 8 years. And I'm still in it now. Still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. And I think it's why I keep switching careers, because I was in education for 2 years. Then I was in software engineering for about 3 months. Now I'm in finance. And there is just this, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I thought I did until I realized, oh, that's not really my gift or my passion. And, you know, I think I want to try figure something else out. So ever since, I will say, ever since I was a little girl, if I wanted to try something, I gave myself the chance to try it and I figured out if I liked it or not. And if I did, great. And if I didn't, okay, well, moving on to the next thing. And that's a part of me I still try to honor because I feel like that has made me teachable. It's helped me stay adaptable. It's helped me not put myself in a box or confine myself to just one thing, because I firmly believe I am very multifaceted, even if it doesn't always appear that way, whether it's how I show up, how I think. I always want to have an open mind while still remaining grounded, which is how my mom and dad kind of raised me. And then how my brothers always kept my eyes open to, my dad always said, you can be anything you want. You can be anything you want. So.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's like you can be anything you want, but you see the outside, the external factors that leads you, and you picked volleyball in the sport and you go on, you play club and you're the MVP every year you play club. Then you go to Bowie High School and then you play and then you go to Tuskegee. Yep. And just now that I think of it, what is that moment like that you've been striving for something throughout your adolescent, your childhood years? Now you have the game volleyball. You saw that you could take this as a, probably as the vehicle that takes you to where you want to go as in finding your education. What is that like? Your first game, you strap up, you're a libero. So you're wearing a different color than everybody. The spotlight is kind of on you. Like when we went, me and my boys, we went in high school, we went to go watch the volleyball games. We were like crazy, but like, I was like, why is this one wearing a different color?
Wearing a different color jersey. Why is she special? Yeah.
When you're in that spotlight moment, your first game, what are the thoughts that are going through your head?
In college or in high school?
First game in college.
First game in college. It was, I felt like I made it. I felt like all those years of staying, of not having that much of a social life come spring semester because I'm in club, I'm in private lessons. All that time of reaching out to college coaches, all that time of icing my knee or my ankle. It just felt like I finally got where I was going. Finally felt like this is what I've been working towards. And it really is the coolest moment ever, because you put your gear on and it's a home game, and HBCU volleyball games, or HBCU games for that matter, are just, they're, who doesn't love them? And so there's just this rush that goes through your bones of like, man, this is cool. This is cool. And like, I was only 17 playing my first college game. And so I just, and starting at that. And so to just kind of get to that place, I'm just like, this is what I work towards. Like, this is amazing. And then, you know, even through Hell Week, I'm just like, do I want to play volleyball that bad? What's Do I love this sport that bad? The first week to 2 weeks of preseason, it's you're getting screamed at 4 o'clock in the morning. You are hitting 3-a-days. You can't walk. You can barely walk up the stairs because you're sore. Coaches are yelling at you and you're like, do I want to play the sport that bad? Then you strap up for that first game. And you're like, oh yeah, I love this game. I absolutely love this game. And I'm like, yeah, here, this is it. This is what we've been working towards. And you just grind it out the rest of the season.
Yeah. That's as interesting for a 17-year-old to come in, start grinding after everything that you've accomplished and you've done to this point. It brings me to my kind of story, because I see myself in that. Like I say all the time on here that my best friend, Tevin Orr, he didn't think I was going to start my freshman year. He didn't, whatever, but I started. And so when you see yourself triumph and all the goals that you had inside your head personally, it's kind of playing out and you see the roadmap, you start locking in. But also off the court, I started relaxing and finding myself in college.
That's exactly what happened.
My journey as I'm a Christian, a believer. In college, the activities, you couldn't always tell. I'm curious to know your lifestyle in college and your journey with your faith.
Oh, we go in there. Okay. I grew up in a Christian household, was raised in the faith, raised in the church. I knew the word. Go off to college. You know, they say, you know, the Bible says, raise up a child in the way they should go. They will not depart from it. And I grew up under a strict mother and father. And I'm the youngest. I'm the only girl. So I go 800 miles away. I'm a college athlete, so I'm feeling myself. I am young. I'm starting. I realize, like, I'm her. I was a good academic student, but I started slacking because we were gone all the time. And I thought, oh, my professors will understand because I had really great teachers in high school that thought like that. And my academics started to slip. I was in a relationship like the latter half of my freshman year. So like, I wouldn't say I was boy crazy, but you know, my attention is not on like what I want to establish here. I'm just living. Like I said, I was only 17. I turned 18 halfway through the season. And my common name in college, my teammates would call me was Sister Fisher. And yeah, that's a whole nother spiel of its own. But I didn't always look like or act like I was set apart. I didn't always act that way because the culture of college is everybody's doing what everybody is doing and you're allowed to do that. And if you are going against the grain of that, people are kind of looking at you sideways or people are thinking you just kind of get ostracized. And so for me, I was going with the wave. I got freedom. I have things to do. I'm an athlete. So of course I can't get too wild, but I got a little bit lost in that. And it's funny that you asked that because by the end of that semester, I finished with a 2.0 flat, which is the bare minimum of what you need to be eligible, the bare minimum. And by the grace of God, I got that 2.0 because some of my teammates couldn't come back that following semester because they had, And so by the time spring semester hit, that was a very hard slap in the face of reality of if you don't get it together, you're not staying at the school. All that work you put in, all that rush you felt your first game is going out the door. If you don't get it together, if you don't get your mind together, if you don't get back in your word because you've fallen a little bit off the deep end, if we had our fun. Now it's time to lock back in because to whom much is given, much is required. With great power comes great responsibility. And with leadership comes a lot of service. So you need to be able to step up to the plate. Otherwise, you're going back to Texas. And all that work that we worked so hard for, keeping a 3.4 in high school, is gone. It's out the door.
What was the steps after that to get to the point of, okay, locked in? Like, how did you get to a place where, okay, I can be all that I am, knowing that, okay, I've had my little fun, but I'm locked in. Now I'm like, what was that gap stage? Like, what was that period to get to the place where, okay, I can play, I'm comfortable? What was that like?
That was me being honest with myself. When you go off to college and you live on your own, you have to realize like it's nobody's holding you accountable anymore. Mom and dad aren't reminding you. Your teachers aren't going to be on your head. Your coach, she will be, but you learn quickly. You don't want to be running 4:30 in the morning. So you quickly learn, let me get my butt to class. Reality kicked in. So that gap was me being honest with myself. I had poor time management. I had very bad boundaries and I had an off sense of what God put me in this place for. Cause he didn't put me here to just play volleyball. He put me here to get an education. I'm a fourth generation HBCU graduate or student for that matter. And so this was more than just playing ball. You're a student first. So you're here to get your education, which is what your parents worked so hard for, which is what your grandmother and grandparents who didn't even get to go to college or high school for that matter, worked towards. And if God puts you over here and calls you to be set apart, that means you need to start acting like it. And so it was a lot of me being honest with myself. Like I said, I was very self-aware, so I knew what my problem areas were. But I also had to recognize, like, if we don't do the things we're talking about doing, we're going home. Mm. We're going right back home. And it was a very stern talking to, because my parents didn't even tell. They didn't even tell me. They were like, all right, either you're going to stay. But they didn't have to get on me at all because I knew it's on me at this point.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. That like it was me parenting myself, girl, get it together. You better get up and get after it. Otherwise, you're going home.
That trait, though, a lot of people don't have. And I resonate with that story because it's you have the values of your household, but also the discipline to find it and figure it out. But also the faith. It's funny because as I try to articulate myself, it's like in college, you also go through self-discovery, but you also have the faith backing of everything that is you. And so what, as you dip and you twist and you turn and you go through these valleys, these peaks and valleys of college, of your life, you still have that faith foundation to lay your head on. But also the thing that I like in your story, a lot of people's like, dang, if they grew up in that foundation of faith and those values, they're like, God gonna get me past this. They gonna get me through it. Faith without works is dead.
It's dead.
Gotta get up and do something about it. And yeah. And the fact that you're so like lock in on your podcast, you say lock in, and some of the terminology, the jargon that we use in sports, I'm like, no, this girl had to have played sports. Like, and so I like that when I hear your story. In college, though, I'm curious in your experience, because for me, you want to get to a championship, mm-hmm. you want to be an NBA player. Those are the things you're striving after. For you, if you knew there's going to be Hell Week the next mm-hmm. year and the next year and the next year, I got to get my grades right. I'm mm-hmm. trying to become this something. What is that you're chasing in that college time, like inside yourself? Like, why were you so able to turn it on, switch it, and go after a goal? I know you said it because you're fourth generation, you're doing it for your family, those values to inspire. But for you, like, what kept you going every day?
It took me back to when I wanted to quit in high school, just because drama, politics, life, and even some of the friendships I was in, just the whole nine. And I remember speaking to my mom about it and then saying this over myself, is that I just believe there's more. I genuinely believe that there is more out there than what I'm seeing and experiencing right now. And when you have that belief, and sometimes you don't even know what it is, it becomes a driving factor in your life. And you don't even always know. And I know now, well, that was God the whole time. Mm. Like, I, all this purpose and all of this leadership and all of these wisdom that God has given me, this can't just be for right now. Like, I can't just use this just because this is all that there is. My mom, oh gosh, that woman, she raised me. She said, you always keep your future in front of you. She said, you always be the road of where do I want to be next? Because my mom is from a small little town.
No, you're
She's
good.
Number
you're good.
Seven of 15 kids. And she said, she always told me, she's like, I always knew that there was something else I wanted to do. There was always something more. And so for me, and she's telling me this from the moment I can walk to me being older, like even unto now, and she's in her later 60s and I'm 25, but she always said, like, you keep your future ahead of you and you always believe that God has more for you. And even if you don't always know what that more is, you keep going until you find out. You keep trying these things and you keep putting these hats on and you keep walking down these paths because one day you're going to hit it. And a lot of the time you're going to stumble across something you didn't know was going to be for you, AKA podcasting for me. And so that has been a driving force of just, there's got to be more. Like there's too much he gave me, too much he put inside of me. There's just this understanding in this little bitty body that there's more, that there's greater. Greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. That was a verse I lived by in high school. And because greater is he that is in me, there's got to be greater that I'm going to see, that I'm going to get past this. Cause I struggled with mental health really bad. That's when my anxiety got the worst in college. And I had to get past, like, what I'm feeling right now can't be the end of it. Like, this cannot be my story. This cannot be the end of my story. And ever since then, even though I haven't always been able to pinpoint it, I know that that has kept me going in the middle of not knowing what I was doing or where I was going.
What were you feeling then? If I was to guess, and I don't like guessing people's stories, because it's always one thing, the outside, the headlines might say, okay, this is your senior year, Bree Fisher, she's coming back, liberal. It might say something, but you on the internal, the real story might say something different. If I'm just listening to this and listening to your story, I would say the transitional, the time that you had an injury, those are the times that you're really going through it. One, is that accurate? And two, if it's not, what are those times that you had to fight through and find the answer to that question? Is there more? What were you feeling at that time?
In that time, I started telling myself, well, that must be the end of it. Through the injury, through anxiety, because that was when I really, really struggled with it. Like, it was beating the hell out of me every day. And the best I could do some days was get up, go to class, go to practice. There wasn't a lot of interacting in the outside world. I was in my room most of the time. And what kept me going, honestly, was the grace of God. Because, like I said, I think that was around sophomore year when I first experienced it. And so on into senior year, I finally got my GPA up. I was at like a 3.1 by that point overall. So I boosted up my GPA. But I wanted to finish what I started. And in Ecclesiastes, it says finishing is better than starting. And so
when you say you finally, when you first experienced it, what was it?
Anxiety.
How did it come? Like, and I experienced a moment where everything's coming on me. You feel it and you're like, what was that moment for you in that time?
I felt really alone in college. I felt because I started trying, aka trying, emphasis on trying to walk with the Lord and do things His way. I felt very ostracized. I felt very alone because the people I thought were with me were not. Mom and dad, because now I'm used to college. Nothing is quite new and nothing is quite as exciting. And I'm in the middle of an injury. So the thing that got me here that I worked for is now working against me. Now, all those things my parents raised me in, those have to come out. And I've never stretched these muscles before. So now I have to start stretching them. And it was lonely. It was so lonely. And I didn't want to cope the way, you know, everybody in college copes, because everybody's smoking, everybody drinking, everybody's doing whatever they want to do. And that was cool at the moment. But I'm like, this, because I've experienced more, this just isn't pacifying what my soul actually needs. And so I had to get alone. I had to separate. And even though I said I was lonely, there was no other place I was going to find refuge or direction or hope. And as I was growing in my faith, because I would say college is when my faith really, really, really started growing. That's where the identity thing came. That's when it was like, okay, I'm not just an athlete. I'm not just maybe a cute girl at a historically black college. I'm a child of a father who cares about me, about a king who says, I have a great future for you. My name, my middle name became personal, Esther. I put you on earth for such a time as this. My name became so much more personal. Then this identity thing started to kick in. There was this narrative wrote over me that even though my circumstances don't say it, this is what God said about it. And so as I'm working past, because I was also dealing with the death of family members too. So anxiety, I'm far away from home, I'm injured. These friendships or these so-called relationships I'm in are not good for me. I had to go to the one place that I knew that I was raised up in to always run to, even though I ran to everything else first.
Yeah.
And I'm so, my apologies if I'm dancing around your question, but I think just waking up to see and praying when I didn't feel like praying and seeking out counseling and mentoring and community when I wanted to not talk about what I was struggling with was the only way I was able to get by. And not only just get by, but it's like stay alive to see another day and then get back to that believing God for more. Because sometimes it's hard to believe Him for more when you are experiencing less and less and less. And more just seems to have more and more problems. So
thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because one, it helped me. And two, it helped me realize that I don't think I even reached out for help.
Yeah.
You know, I had my mom in the time when I was in Germany, she sent me Fred Price and I watched all his from there. And I was just like, okay, let me, like, I remember who I am and then let me start a podcast. But I don't think I practically went to someone to tell them my problems and tell them what I'm going through and tell them all these thoughts. When I lost two family members, I had a therapist, but I was like, bro, like, buddy ain't cutting it. He's not doing it for me. Like, I like that you said that, because in one of your episodes, you mentioned something that I will definitely say over and over. It's so huge. And it's alliteration, prayer and practicality. Like, you can't just say, we plead the blood, we pray. But like, practically, what else? Like, what are your steps to talk to somebody about what you're going through and then the steps out of it? I like that you're really on now transitioning to what you're doing with your podcast and really teaching people about how to go through these mental, emotional, physical challenges that you faced in your life. I like how you walk them through stories in the Bible, and then you add your own personal context, because it's always even hearing this. That's why I like personal stories. I see myself in your story. I see myself in an injury, and then damn, like, I'm in a dark room and all my teammates, all my friends saying, doing it this way. But I'm like, dang, I got to read the word. And this word ain't showing me what I need to, because I don't see it. But then knowing that faith is not seeing, it's, oh, I actually got to believe it to see it. And I got to speak it over me to see it. Yeah. The fact that you like, I see myself in that. And in your podcast, what you do that I love is that you take people through stories in the Bible to where they see a human in the Bible, because a lot of people say, oh, that's an old book. No, it's not. These principles are everyday things. You take them through Bible stories and then you equate and you pair the two. I love that. When you think about the days after the game and your journey after the game, your senior year, what was it that kept you going? And what did you look to say, okay, my life after sports will be this? Like, that transition for a lot of people is challenging, even for myself. I'm thinking, damn, should I still play my whole life? I want to be in the NBA. I know I can. I know I'm better. I've been there. I've seen people. But damn, I have this thing, this podcast and speaking and inspiring people that I just can't stop. I can't shake it. Nope. What was your journey in transitioning out of the sport like? And how do you wake up each day with the enthusiasm to not only share on your podcast, but share in professionally in your personal life? Like, walk me through your journey.
The transition, I think the transition started before the season ever ended. I think God was, by senior year, I think God was kind of already weaning me off of it, because I knew, well, volleyball is not like it doesn't have the same, I guess, notoriety the way like basketball does here in the States. Like the NBA, like, you got to go to the USA level or Olympic level or overseas. And overseas wasn't really on my radar at the time, nor was I sure, is this what I want to keep doing? And so before senior year really started, I knew my time was coming to a close, and slowly but surely I started making peace with it, because I knew that volleyball was only going to go so far, and it paid for my education, which was one of the biggest blessings. And like I said, it taught me a lot of life lessons. I gained a lot of really dope relationships, connections, friendships from that. But God started weaning me off. And so the transition was very long, actually. But by the time the season had ended, I was able to walk away grateful. And my mom, who was also an athlete, she said she would always cry when basketball season was over, because that was her game. And so for me, it was like, I'm really glad that happened. I'm so grateful that I had all that time that I was able to dedicate this to myself. And it was a goodbye that I was honestly ready for. I was honestly ready to say goodbye, because I just knew, like, it was only going to last for so long. And then it was like, okay, well, now, because I wanted cheerleader, I wanted to dance, especially at HBCU, I wanted to dance. There were so many other things that kind of had to go on the shelf because my life was committed to volleyball that I now was going to have the time for. And so my transition also turned into this open field of what else? What next? What else? And that was an open-ended question that I had an opportunity to pick from, but COVID. You thought you had that COVID, psych. Mm. And even though even though COVID kind of took that away, I still knew I can, there's something else. Now, mind you, after I graduated college, I started coaching. I wasn't, clearly I wasn't too done with the game, because I went right back to coaching a club volleyball for 16-year-olds. And it reminded me of why I started in the first place, of just seeing these girls go from this skill level to this skill level and being able to teach them all the things that I had learned over the course of God knows how many years, all the things that my coach has told me that I'm now screaming at them about. It became so much more personal of like, this is why I started. And this is why I was so happy to go through it for so long. And I was able to impart to them what really great coaches imparted to me. And I was able to not, I don't even know what kind of coach I was. Some say I was great. Some may say I wasn't. I did my best and I did the best with what I had. But what I will say is just to impart and keep the cycle going of the love for the game, to share the IQ, to share the knowledge, to share the passion, and to uplift somebody in the process of something I once loved and now laid to rest because I ended up, I stopped coaching after that, was just, God, thank you for starting this. And I'm so glad I got to see the end of it and I can leave it peacefully and now I can just enjoy it. And so the transition was long, it was beautiful. It was a little sad, but it was just like, God, thank you for your good things that you give us, that you let us experience. And now let's move on to the next thing. Let's move on to the next gift.
Man, Brianna, that was so beautiful. That was so well said. That was so well said, because one, I'm like, this girl's got it. She's a leader. In my head, I'm like, I'm just like, what? Like the way that you speak, you speak with your heart out, like, and you're eloquent and you synthesize what you went through, how you felt and how you want to give back. I'm like, damn, okay, she should have a podcast. She does. But like, I love that in people. They're able, one, you're a leader, but they're able to use the thing that they're struggling with, that they say, all right, I hate this game, I love this game, all right, let me go back and pour into the kids. Oh, shoot, I love the game again. But then, like, let me put it down to find who I am. I love that you're able to use the tool, the gift that God gave you to pour back and to instill and to push out purpose and expand his kingdom through what you did. That's everything. I have a question, though, learning more about you. Because to take it to a different place.
Let's go.
Me, I'm a transitioning player, person, kind of in your stage. The one thing that you strive, okay, career-wise, you're trying to get it, and we know how to grow and ambitious. We know how to do that. We know how to do that for sports. I'm curious to know, like, your world in relationships. Because you can't just, okay, I'm just going to go on this date. All right. Doesn't work. It doesn't work the same way.
Nope.
What's your journey been like with romantic love? And finding somebody that's strong in his faith.
How much time you got?
I got some time.
Relationships. That's a loaded question. Let's start here. As an athlete, you always end up dating other athletes. It's inevitable. You need somebody that matches your level of passion, competitiveness, just fire for a goal or whatever. That's great. And to a degree, you do get that. But then you also start deepening your faith. And like I said, as a multifaceted person, there are different parts of me that come out in different areas of life, some all at the same time. And so, as being a woman of God, as being someone that wants to move in her creative abilities, you know, dating in our generation just kind of seems really complicated. And I'm gonna be honest about myself. I'm a lover girl through and through, a hopeless romantic, a lover girl through and through. And so there are these desires, and a God's girl at that. So there's these desires that I naturally have as a woman that sometimes I don't always get to experience. And for me, dating or relationships, romantically, so to speak, has been complicated because for one, there was trauma areas I hadn't dealt with yet. Let's start there. Trauma I had never dealt with. I had, so to speak, low self-esteem that made me accept things that were beneath me. and made me just be okay with things that I look at now. I'm like, I should have flipped over that table a long time ago. I should have walked away. But those things are, for one, having someone, being with someone in the same faith. I did date somebody I'd unintentionally, not knowing that they were not a believer. That crushed me. Also being non-compromising about how I want to be treated, about how I want to be talked to, of even when you are angry, do not talk to me like you lost your mind. Even when life is hitting you and all of these, don't get me wrong, like the world is full of incredibly beautiful women. Do you still recognize a good thing in front of you when there's many other options out there? Do you still recognize a good thing that is in front of you? And also, like, and even with me, I had a lot of growing up to do as well. And so I think that's made me accepting of things I didn't need to be accepting of. But also, it just, I could not love someone correctly, nor accept love correctly until I loved myself. And I know we talk about self-love all the time. Oh, you just need to love yourself. You got to accept yourself. You cannot love someone you do not accept. And I could not love myself fully because I didn't fully accept myself. All I saw were these flaws. All I saw were these problems and these weaknesses, and it made me shrink, and I would shrink from it. And the good things about me, my actual gifts, I would shrink because they felt like they were not going to be digestible or palpable for other people. And so I would emphasize my weaknesses and I would shrink my strengths. And sometimes that's how I would show up in relationships. And as women, naturally, we can get lost in serving a relationship, or we can unintentionally center our life around men. And so in being single, I've been single for a minute now, is just pouring into myself the way I would someone else and loving myself. Most importantly, last year, really, really, really accepting who I am, really loving that little 8-year-old girl, loving that 15-year-old girl, loving that 18-year-old girl, now loving that 25-year-old woman. And like I said, dating this generation is complicated in and of itself. There's so many rules. There's so many thresholds you have to go through before you are actually in a relationship with someone. And I'm just like, honestly, God, I don't want to keep doing this my way because my way sucks. And I have found myself heartbroken, isolated, hurt, all over the place. And I just rather wait. I'll be patient. I'll slow myself down. I'll deal with myself. I'll accept myself. I'll go to you. And in the time that it's supposed to be for me is when I'll meet that person, is when me and that person will come together and our time, our desires, our plans will be in alignment with each other. Until then, I'm just.
You're so funny because one, that part that you said at the end, I want to pinpoint that here in a second. But there's another thing that I wanted to hit on because you said self-love and finding time to love yourself. Mm-hmm. It's funny. I asked myself that question during college at the end. And if someone usually, do you love yourself? Yes. But okay, what are the actions that you're living out that says that you love yourself? You slinging yourself to this girl, you get like that doesn't show that you love yourself. And for you to ask you this question, did you get that answer? Do you love yourself? And how, what were the steps that it took you to get to that answer?
Did I love myself was a question I never asked myself entirely. I would just assume that I did. Oh yeah, I do love myself. Oh, I take care of myself. I get my nails done. I treat myself, blah, 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 blah. And on TikTok, that was a fab of like self-love journey, self-love era, self-improvement era. So, and it was always, like I said, the physical, what things look like. Whereas the internal work means I'm standing in all these broken pieces of myself and still saying you are still enough. You're good. You're worthy of love. It was me less focused on trying to change myself and more of me saying, regardless, while we are working on ourselves, you still deserve love right now. Because it was funny. It was actually a conversation I had with my best friend. And I told her I was about to like start dating someone. And she had said, I don't know if you need to spend more time alone, but I think you need to work on this. And I ended up talking to her about it a week later because I said, what you said really upset me because it made it seem like where I am right now is not deserving of love as I'm working on myself. And a light switched on. That was last year. I think that was March of last year. And it was like that one thing that was offensive at first flipped in my head what was backwards the whole time of, you can be improving and still recognize that you are God's craftsmanship, that you are His perfect work, that you are, yes, you're human and you're shredded in a lot of places and all these things. However, He loved you. He said, in the Bible says, while we were sinners, so you don't have to arrive while we were sinners, He still loved us and He gave His life for us. You don't have to arrive to this level of perfection that you think you need to get to in order to be loved. Bump all that. I don't need to do all that. I'm still working on myself. I still deserve to be loved correctly because that's what Christ did for me in the first place. And so as I accept that love, as I accept myself, I accept His love, then who I am starts to show up as I agree that I deserve that love. And so It was when I internally really started believing it for myself is when it started to show up on the outside. So my boundaries became stronger. Me saying no became stronger. Me saying, I don't want to do that. Simply because I don't want to do that, I'm honoring what I need way more instead of people pleasing, instead of showing up for everybody and what everybody else needs. It's, what does Brianna need? What does Brianna want? What is it that God spoke over Brianna? And if anything is not matching up with that, we ain't going that way. And ever since then, like I said, this just happened last year, so we're still in this journey pretty new. Ever since I came to that conclusion, I wanted to live my life in accordance to God loves me, so I get to love myself well. And I get to be and pick and choose the people that are also going to love me the way I love myself. And if the standard I love, and if the standard for myself and the way I love myself is in accordance to the way God loves me, then the people that are going to come into my life are also going to be a reflection of that.
I could ask you so many more questions and I had so much. There is one thing that you did say that I struggle with too. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, self-love. Okay, I love myself. You should love yourself before you find somebody. But it's like, bro, we're all figuring it out. Shouldn't you find all someone that's chasing after what you're chasing after while you're 100%. Growing together? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that we are kind of different in the way that I think and the way that male and female are is that the guy can't just, oh God, no, we gotta be going. We can't just say God will do it. Yes, He will. But like, you gotta walk, faith without works is dead. You gotta approach a girl. The girl, y'all can just crush her. Like, but you still gotta position yourself to like, yes, wink at a brother, smile, yes, at somebody, do something. How are you strategically putting yourself in places to say, God's going to do it, but wink, wink, nudge, nudge, my boy, I like you. Hello. Like, how do you strategically say, ooh, if somebody come in that's attractive, how do you make yourself known?
Still working that out. That's still a work in progress. But my mom always says, both of my parents always say, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. I think, for one, trying to upkeep my appearance matters, even though I look this way currently. Like I said,
you look nice.
Thank you. Upkeeping, whether it's my skincare or maintaining how I look. But also, first, I see nothing wrong with women starting conversation. A shooter can shoot.
I love that.
Women absolutely have the power to start conversation because that's all it is. Whether you're a friend or someone I'm interested in, we can simply start a conversation. We forget there's power. The art of conversation is a very beautiful thing that we need to divulge in a little bit more. Now, be honest about your intentions, but like, just talk. Like, there's nothing wrong with just talking, and that's coming from someone that's introverted half the time. But if I see someone, sometimes I'll just be like, hey, I like your shoes, or you're very handsome. Or just like, hey, how's your day going? Conversation is a very simple art that we forget about. Sometimes, what else have I done?
That's so weird that you say that, because as a people pleaser, and I resonate when you said all this, like self-love, I resonate with that because people pleasing, you feel like, oh, I got to do this for this girl. Even As simple as that. I've had people, oh, you're handsome. I feel like, damn, do I have to like her now? Like,
no.
Sounds
no.
weird.
You don't know.
I have two sisters, and I can imagine my sister, she's going, like, if she, I know her background, if she goes out, she's like confident, she's feeling on charge. I want to approach this guy and say, oh, I like, ooh, you're handsome. And I'm like, damn, I don't want to not say anything that just changes her situation and her, the way she looks at the world. But like you said, I can't, I don't know. That's something I think about. And I still kind of struggle with, like, how do I respond in those moments to keep it platonic if I'm not interested, or like, I don't know.
The power of honesty. Thank you. I hope you have a wonderful day. And if that person is aware, because here's the thing. Starting a conversation doesn't always mean you'll get a conversation. I will say I have shot my shot quite a few times. And sometimes it was as simple as a thank you. Other times it was, oh, like, let's carry on.
Guys don't know when you're shooting your shot. How did you shoot your shot? I swear, guys don't know.
I went up to him. I said, you are very handsome. What is your name? Or do you have a... First, I asked, you know, are you single? What is your name? How are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe talk a little bit more. And then I'll say, well, look, I didn't come here to bother you, but if you'd like to exchange information, great. And if not, you don't have to. It's I'm not saying it's that simple, but granted, liquid courage does help a lot. Sometimes I've been sober. Liquid courage has helped in other instances. I don't do it anymore. I'm retired. I'm not putting up those shots anymore. But I think there's art in just saying hi, seeing where it goes. Because a lot of the time we have the idea this has to end in marriage or this has to end in a date.
Yeah.
No, oh sometimes God. It's you just got to put shots up. You don't know. And my mom always says, you won't know until you do. You won't know until you do it. And she didn't say it for this specific instance, but sometimes she wasn't talking about this. Let me say that. But sometimes you just have to put yourself out there, and putting yourself out there does come with the potential of rejection. And this goes for anything. It does come with the potential of rejection or maybe being ghosted or maybe being led astray. And honestly, the women should not pursue. I'm a firm believer in the man is to pursue, but a woman can start a conversation. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't put yourself out there, you'll never know. And as a person who likes to try things, and I'm like, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? A lot could actually happen, but I won't know. And if I keep sitting on this side of not knowing and how am I going to be perceived and how are people going to take it? I'm never going to start anything. I'm never going to try anything. I'm never going to give myself the chance to fail. And Kanye West said that in an interview. He said, what are people doing? We talk so much about trying that people don't do anymore. And that keeps us from. So if you're failing, you're actually winning because you're learning from something not going well. But that's my take on it. That's my take on life. So you just got to try.
That's your take on it. I love your takes. I love the idea of trying. And I honestly enjoyed this conversation because learning more about you through your podcast is one thing, but hearing your story and why you have the purpose and the drive that you do to even start Made in His Image, I think it's beautiful. And I know that anyone that listens, anybody that dives in more into your story, anybody that's interested should and can see where it actually comes from. And I'm grateful to house this conversation because I do think all it takes is conversation. I know that this even helped me search myself on certain topics as well. The one thing I do ask all my guests to close out the show, overcoming your negative voice, overcoming your mind bully. What are your practical steps that in those times where you're transitioning after a game, or maybe you're dealing with rejection after something happened or after a relationship, those moments when you're in those deep and dark times, what are the practical steps that you work to overcome your mind bully?
I asked myself, who said that? Who said that? Who told you that? That's the first thing I say. Where did it come from? Why are we feeling that way? First, you got to acknowledge how you feel. You got to sometimes let the emotion just run its course. How do I feel? And then you just got to go back to the word. You have to go back. And certain scriptures I will recite over myself until I believe it. It may take me all day. It may take me just a couple minutes or just a prayer. I have to back away for a little while just so I can get my thoughts just so I can get my mind back in order. And I think asking yourself, who said that? And then reciting scripture over yourself, whether it's Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, or I am his craftsmanship, or he can do exceedingly and above, or be not anxious about anything. There's so much scripture that I can go to, because the Bible says he watches over his word to perform it. So you have to spit his word out back at the devil so he can perform it. That's literally your shield and your lifeline, and then prayer. And then if you just can't handle it, I reach out for help. I say, I really need y'all to pray for me. I'll call my mom. I'll call my friends. I say, I really need y'all to reach out and pray. I need y'all's prayers right now. And if sometimes you just got to let it run its course and still hold on to hope, this will pass at some point, whether I feel like it will or not. And live to see another day. The best thing you can do some days is live to see another day and see God's sovereignty in the days that passed. And then you're at the end of it and you count it all joy, like, oh God, all those trials, you were perfecting me, you were maturing me, you were letting all that steadfastness run its course so that I was lacking nothing. And so you see by the end of those days, oh God, you had me the whole time.
Mm. You're such a bright soul, man. I really appreciate that answer. It helped me. I'm like, damn, like overflow. I like who you are and even looking at your story, where you are at this point. I know that God's doing big things with your podcast, but your voice is one that should be amplified, because I know that the traits that you have, it's almost like you're doing the work internally to wrestle with yourself, but you're wrestling not to just help yourself, to help other people. So Made in His Image podcast is a great podcast that I'm now also a listener to. And I'm glad to have Miss Brianna Fisher on the Mind Believe podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And cool. Can I also add, Norrence?
Yeah.
Your pod is amazing. You were one of the inspirations behind me starting podcasting. You among a couple other. Yes. I was a Mind Bully fan. I think like last year, Lexi had talked about it. Lexi.
Oh, that's love.
Girl Lexi. And I think what you're doing is amazing. I think the conversation you have started is freeing a lot of people. And as you're wrestling, there's a lot of people you're freeing. So be encouraged. As you're struggling, you're freeing a lot of people and you are also getting free. So keep doing that, because your voice should also be amplified. Your story is amazing. And your courage to be honest and vulnerable as a Black man with a lot of faith and an athlete is very needed.
Man, what a powerful episode. Listening to that back, I definitely shed a tear, because a lot of the things she was saying, man, it was exactly on time for my moment. So thank you, Bree, for being on the show. If you like anything that you heard out of that show, I know I just changed. That's who I am. I got to be myself. If you like anything that you heard out of this episode and out of any episodes on the Mind Bully podcast, do me a favor. Rate and review this podcast. It means a ton, like everything, for you to do that so we can reach more people and we can change lives together. Thank you. Till the next one.
Hey, Genix, you going off.